It is a quite honor for me to have a chance to speak in front of not only a renowned professor around the world, but MLB and LLM student candidates at Kyushu University who are very active and highly motivated. Today my presentation is on M&A rules, regulations in Japan and its transformation. Before I talk on the main theme of M&A regulation, I'd like to briefly mention the convergence debate on corporate governance and other regulations. Before we discuss whether corporate governance is converging or not, we have to clarify what we were talking about is converging. Professor Gilson once distinguished formal convergence and functional convergence. It's right, but it seems to me that it is not enough. As I wrote in the handout, so please open the this volume and please find the final page of my article. I added a sheet of paper at the end of my paper, which shows as I wrote in the handout, there are a lot of peers which are good candidates of the subject of the convergence debate. For example, Kanzman and Krakman argued that the corporate law around the world will be converging to the idea that the law should maximize the long-term interest of shareholders. This argument relates to the first year of the panel. So the first year of fundamental policy, I mean. Another example is the law and finance literature insisted by the Gang of Four, as explained by the Professor Cox already. They argued that Anglo-American law is superior to other law models such as German and French law in protecting the interests of shareholders and creditors of corporations. This argument has had a huge impact globally. Many countries adopted some institutions and ideas in the corporate law and securities regulations in the United States. The law on finance literature relates to the fourth year of my handout, that is, statutory convergence. Today, I will present two tips in order to avoid ambiguities in the discussion and obtain deeper insight into the convergence debate. First, we have to put more emphasis than before on the process of legal transplant. The process is not a natural phenomenon. It is rather an intentional attempt of the decision maker of the country to pick up foreign law or system selectively as well as strategically. Sometimes the decision maker transplants foreign institutions without having sufficient knowledge about local rules and customs or using due care of the locality. Maybe this explains Russia around 1999, what happened in Russia around that time. Anyway, today I present what happened in Japan when Japan imported the defensive tactics against hostile takeovers, so-called a poison pill. Second, in discussing the convergence, we have to define the issue adequately and narrowly and analyze two or more tiers of the subject with regard to the issue. Today I limit my argument to takeovers, especially hostile takeovers, and I focus on both the first and third tiers of convergence debate. I mean, first of the fundamental policy and the third, that is, institutional convergence. My analysis is partially illustrated in Table 2 in the handout. I exaggerated the differences between the shareholder model and stakeholder model, and also between the standard operating regulation model and the defensive tactics model. Anyway, simply put, I conclude that although Japan adopted the US model with regard to the legal institution that is opposed to it, Japan has remained as a stakeholder model with regard to the policy issues so far. And would you please open my paper? On page 2 to 4 of my paper, I made some comments on the convergence debate. Professor Cox argued that the convergence of securities regulation would be more plausible than that of corporate law. But please note, securities regulation and corporate law here are concepts. In the United States, the convergence of securities regulation and corporate law is different from coverage of securities regulation and corporate law is different from country to country. For instance, in the United Kingdom and Australia, corporate law and securities regulation are promulgated in a single statute. Securities regulation in Japan has regulations on investment banks, distributors, or financial instruments, as well as disclosure requirements and regulation on unfair trading as essential components. Therefore, we should be careful of what part of securities regulation is conversion. Another reminder is a particular rule in country A and a different rule in country B may work in functionally a similar way. A hypothesis I gave in my paper was that the shareholder derivative suit in Japan might work somewhat similarly to the securities litigation in the United States. I have an impression that most U.S. scholars are not favoring the derivative suit, while some Asian countries have been adopting the system. Here, the point is not which of corporate law or securities regulation is essential. Rather, the point is that securities litigation and derivative suits could play a common function as a private enforcement on a functional level, whereas they are different in the legal details, in other words, formal level. Now I move on to my main topic today. Look at the table 1 on page 5. The form of takeover regulation in the United States is quite different from that in the EU. Today I intentionally neglect small differences within the EU countries. In the United States, corporate managers can use defensive tactics against hostile bidders, but the abuse of defensive tactics is subject to injunctive relief by the court. European countries have a detailed set of rules on bidders' activities, and at the same time, the neutrality principle is imposed on company managers. In short, they are not allowed to take an action which would frustrate the emerging takeover. Then, how about Japan? The fundamental structure of Japanese law is similar to that of the United States. We don't have detailed regulations on takeover activities or an authority which supervises tender offers like the takeover panel in England. Because there is no neutrality principle, company managers are not prohibited from making the company issue new shares into friendly hands. As a general rule, an issuance of a new shares is decided by the board of directors. However, if a court considers the issuance of the shares as the issue is unfair, it gives an injunctive relief. That's the Japanese law. Until recently, hostile takeovers were quite rare because those shares in a listed company were often held by another listed company which belonged to the same group of companies. This structure is often called cross-shareholding or K-label. the extent of core shareholding has become smaller since 1990, and instead, foreign investors have increased their portions of investment in Japanese companies. In 2004, the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry expected that a wave of hostile takeovers would come in the near future. So, the ministry set up a study group to consider what to do. And just before the group published a report on the issue, a well-known takeover case broke out. The facts were given in the part starting from page 8. Actually, I was among the members of the study group of the committee. As the youngest among them, I was not into ancient at all in the group, partly because Japan is still a seniority society. Anyway, the group published a report at the end of May 2005. It recommended for Japanese companies to use a poison pill, and it argued that it would be done even without a revision of the corporate law. The report was, however, silent about the judicial review when a poison pill is triggered by the incumbent managers of the target company. It is natural because otherwise it would jeopardize judicial independence from administrative bureaus. In the first half of year 2005, there were three litigations in which the legality of the defensive tactics was disputed. Among them, two court decisions, namely Lagdor case and Mireko case, two court decisions enjoined the defensive measure at issue, and the other one, namely Yumeshin case, the court dismissed the motion of a shareholder for injunction. In addition to those cases, there were also a lot of events in relation to hostile takeovers since then. I wrote a paper describing them, which will appear in a book edited by Kazu Kinohab, probably published this year. And other information are included in Mr. Kamiya's paper as well. If you are interested in it, please write to me. And please open the page 10 of my paper, which follows. So, the expertise in structuring a poison pill was brought by corporate lawyers, most of whom were young and had graduated from the U.S. law school. However, these young and bright lawyers often omitted to mention the disciplinary role of the Delaware judiciary. The Metis report refers to the Delaware cases such as Unoco and Revlon, but neither the report nor the administrative guideline made any reference to the judicial review as a matter of Japanese law. Probably the judges who ordered an injunctive relief in the NBS case and the Mireko case did not possess adequate knowledge of the Delaware cases. They only applied and extended the existing legal doctrine in Japan. Nevertheless, while adjudicating M&A cases, those judges played a role that was similar to that of the judges in the United States, especially by ordering injunctions. Thus, the role of the judges as a gatekeeper was highlighted. The events are summarized as follows. The development of a takeover law was initiated as an intentional, though selective attempt to transplant the U.S. model. This was nevertheless followed by the development of case law by judges who were not necessarily supposed to refer to U.S. law. Thus, a combination of an intentional but partial transplant and indigenous application made the legal system in Japan even more Americanized. Unquote. However, several divergences have already come out and discussed on page 11 and further. In 2006, the Securities Trading Act was revised and a tender-offer rule in it was made closer to that of the EU directive. It is interesting to see Japanization of the poison pill. As I wrote at the end of footnote 25 on page 16, 106 out of 175 companies that adopted a poison pill before the end of year 2006 resolved to adopt the plan at the shareholders' meeting. This number amounts to 60%. I can think of several reasons for that. The first reason is a consideration of investor relations. If a company manager adopts a poison pill without shareholders' approval, the shares in the company may be sold on a large scale, and thus the price of the shares may decline a lot. Corporate managers can avoid this scenario by getting shareholders' consent in advance. The second reason may be minimizing the possibility that the poison pill will be enjoined by the court when it is disputed in a controlled contest in the future. Obtaining shareholders' approval probably does not remove the possibility of an injunction completely. But anyway, it will somewhat reduce that possibility. Some companies structure the pill such that the company must obtain shareholders' approval before the board of directors triggers the pill during the control contest. For example, the Nippon Steel Corporation, the world's second largest steel company in Japan, introduced this type of poison pill. I suppose this structure of the pill will remove the risk of injunction almost entirely. Then, why do shareholders approve the adoption of the pill? This is a puzzle. Please look at the paragraph at the bottom of page 16, which follows. It is puzzling as to why institutional investors vote in favor of the adoption of poison pills. Under what circumstances do they vote in favor? A possible explanation is that promoting the interests of stakeholders other than those of shareholders will lead to maximizing the shareholders' wealth in the long run. If most institutional investors in Japan share this belief, the policy with regard to company takeovers is different from that of the United States or United Kingdom. However, it is not clear whether this difference will remain for long. The Japanese model will be unstable and thus not sustainable in the long run in the following situation, namely when the judgment of the institutional investors is wrong, and the managers are able to defend themselves even when the proposed takeover is more likely to enhance the profitability of the company, or when the investors do not apply to tender offers even when the offer is lucrative to them, as we see at the struggle between corporate papers and Oji papers last year, unquote. We are one thing for sure. With the wake of hostile takeovers and discussions for and against poison pills, communication between company managers and institutional investors become more often and substantial. This may lead to a coordination of the stakeholder model and the shareholder model of public companies. I'm not sure of it. Please note that the corporation code in Japan empowered shareholders more than general corporation law in Delaware. For instance, as I wrote on page 17, a shareholder of a Japanese company can propose a removal of directors more easily than a shareholder in a U.S. company. And another example is the revision of the Articles of Incorporation. In the United States, shareholders are not empowered. Now, in regard to that, Japanese shareholders have much more empowerment in this regard as well. This means investors are provided with more powerful tools for their communication with corporate managers, at least legally speaking. Back to the convergence debate. Many countries are introducing the components of U.S. corporate governance at different levels. But right now, convergence is only partial. I suppose that the largest impact which the corporate America has given to other countries is not a shareholder-oriented model of founding companies or specific mechanisms such as independent directors or disclosures and shareholder litigation. Rather, the American way of view corporate law is now being accepted around the world. Their view of corporate law is functional and economic. This is different, quite different from traditional view in Europe and other countries, which has put a larger emphasis on doctrine. It seems to me that the new way of thinking is the America's largest contribution. This comment includes my presentation. Thank you.